Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court strike.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Bryant for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today we get into some more of the offseason. And I wanted to get into some of the restricted free agents, RD. Normally, I think restricted free agency is a waste of time for any other team. And in most cases this year, I think that's the case too. But, you know, Jackson Hayes just became Slovenian today, so anything's possible. Let's get into some of the options. Starting with yesterday, we had a report from Sam Amick, who reported that Walker Kessler is unhappy with how the Utah Jazz handled his extension talks and then his restricted free agency coming up right now. Now, we had a recent pod where we discussed a bit of a logjam for Utah, both in terms of money and playing time consolidated in their front court. Now, I don't think they have another center, which is why we talked more about marketing. And when you've got the draft coming up as well with likely either Cam Boozer or DeBanza or one of those forwards to go along with Ace Bailey, a very talented rookie last year, who's 6'8", 6'9", small forward type of size. They've got several front court players that they probably need to alleviate that. And we talked a few pods before that too about how Kessler is, at least for me, my number one guy on the center board and really one of only two, maybe three fives where I'd be like, hell yeah, we got that guy at the five spot to start there. And so I wanted to kick the thought of restricted free agency to you, D. And with the setup of, I think that it's much, much, much likelier for it to be a sign and trade type of scenario than an offer sheet and force out type of scenario. I think that's the leverage, right? Like if we can't come to terms, well, we are going to make an offer sheet that maybe is a few million dollars more than you want to pay. Obviously, Utah doesn't want to go beyond a certain number, but they're also using the leverage that they have against Kessler that all teams have against restricted free agents. So you can apply this to Durin, you can apply this to other places, but really I don't see a lot of other places that they have that sort of logjam that they would want or maybe need to alleviate. And so I do view Kessler as being likelier, but in general, how do you view restricted free agency?
Restricted free agency is, to me, the last sort of hammer that teams hold over players within the revolution of player empowerment and player movement. I don't want to call it a relic. I think it serves a tool.
I hate it. I'll call it a relic. I don't like restricted free agency at all.
I don't like it either, but I'm just saying it's a relic of a system where you wanted to give teams the right of first refusal for losing their own players, which I actually think is important in a certain way of like, we drafted this player, we've invested in this player, and we want to keep this player. So can we have some avenue towards being able to keep this player over other teams? And I think that the financial pull of an extra year and bigger raises matters. But I think that that probably mattered much more when we were talking about the difference between, getting a contract worth $10 million total dollars versus a contract that was worth 18 or 19 or 20 million total dollars. Now, Pete, these dudes are making over the course of a 4 or 5 year deal, like $130, $150 million. Like, you really only need to get paid once, really. And you can be set for generations, honestly. I think that the financial stuff matters to a certain amount, the fifth year or the bigger raise. But players are smart now, and they understand year five with my current team is just year one on my next deal with whatever other team that I go to. And that money will get made up again if I'm as good as I think I am. And players are confident. They should think that they're good. But what's made restricted free agency, to me at least, way more of something that I'm against in general is fewer and fewer teams are going into the marketplace with actual money to spend in free agency. They're way more often extending their best players or keeping their best players and doing it in a way where their cap sheets are almost always like, all right, well, I can maybe use an exception here, or the money that I've put to the side are to sign my own players, where you're looking at maybe 10% of the league at any time, 15% of the league anytime. So like anywhere between 3 and 6 teams that have any amount of money to spend in free agency at all. And that drastically cripples
it does.
The free agent market and makes it so that restricted free agents are screwed a lot of times.
As does the time window that they have to match. That's changed over the years. I don't remember if it's 2 or 3, it used to be 3 days, but usually 90% of the transactions are done in the first 3 days of free agency. So if you're another team that wants to pursue another player on free agency, your cap money is all tied up for that time. So if you don't get that guy, of which you have no control, the other team has 100% control of if they want to match or not, you're left kind of holding the bag. And that's part of the reason why there's no chance to me that the Lakers are like, we're going to hinge our starting center spot on hoping that we can pry Walker Kessler away with a large enough number. I think it'd have to be a sign and trade.
The window now is 3 days, Pete. It used to be 7 days.
Yeah.
When the moratorium was that long, it was just like, yeah, man, guess what? We're waiting through the entire moratorium and teams will drag their feet and your cap space is tied up. You have functionally offered this contract and you're not able to then go back and say, no. Actually, the money I wanted to give Walker Kessler, I'm giving that money to player X instead because I've gotten him to agree first. And this is where restricted free agency sucks. I point back to last season where Cam Thomas was like, oh man, restricted free agency. I'm going to try and go out and get an offer sheet. And the only team that had any functional cap space was his own team.
Yeah.
The Nets. It was his own team.
It really screws the players, right? Because there's no incentive for other teams to pursue you. Like, how many players in the last few years have been signed to an offer sheet? Last guy that comes to mind for me is DeAndre Ayton. A few years back, right? Maybe there's another example or two, but it gives you an idea of how rarely it happens.
It also creates this toxic environment where if you match, a player went and signed that contract functionally to leave. They didn't sign the contract to say like, okay, I'm hoping you match now. Maybe they're happy to stay, maybe. But it's my understanding that Ayton going out and signing that offer sheet with the Pacers was basically him saying, all right, man, y'all didn't want to pay me? I went and got this money from someone else. I don't want you to keep me. And it has the potential to be that first splintering, Pete, between like player and team. And this is why the report on Kessler is super interesting to me. I believe the word that Amick used was disenchanted with the franchise, right? And it's tricky. It's my understanding, based off of the reporting at the time, that Kessler wanted a pretty big deal in terms of his extension. And to the Jazz's credit, and this is what's happening with the Lakers right now as well, they're just like, I'd much rather you go into restricted free agency with a low cap hold and then be able to build out the team in a way where then I pay you last, right? It's not like we're never going to pay you, but we'll pay you last. And what ended up happening was the Jazz were just like, okay, well, we didn't extend Kessler, And now they can project their books in a certain way. And that allows them to go out and trade for Jaren Jackson Jr. and say, like, no, we'll take on $50 million of money because we can build out our roster with an understanding of what our payroll is going to be, because we know Kessler makes $5 million next season. And we've still got the hammer of restricted free agency. It sucks for the player. And it does create this environment where they're just like, well, do you want me or not? Because if you don't want me, then trade me.
But the problem is, that's where most of the talent is on the free agent market. Kessler, yes. Duren, Peyton Watson, Tari Eason, many of Lakers fans' favorite players that they'd want us to pursue are restricted free agents by talent. And so let's go to break here, come back, and talk about that with a focus on Utah.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
So to compare, say, Jalen Duren to Walker Kessler, I think Duren is a bit of a waste of time. However, it would be a similar situation where, you know, he wants a max contract from the Pistons. The Pistons don't want to give that. And coming off of a playoff series, right? Maybe they land on a certain number, whereas we've talked about on this pod for a long time, this CBA in particular, it matters more than ever in terms of what that final number that you agree to. So it stands to reason that there will be some instances where the player thinks I'm worth this, and then another party thinks I'm worth that. And it could lead to trades, right? Where, okay, well, you can get this from somebody else. Are they willing to give us back something to compensate us for that? But in a place like Detroit, I don't see, especially with their cap situation, any sort of money, but also minutes logjam. And that's where I think things are different with Utah. Again, it's Ace Bailey, Lauri Markkanen, Walker Kessler, Jaren Jackson Jr., and then the second pick in the draft, which is very likely to be a forward. None of those guys are guards. And several of those guys are, I put the ball in the hoop for a living, along with Keontae George, who does that as well. So I do think that it's less about like, oh, they can't afford to pay all of this, and more that Utah wants to be good and probably wants to be good next year. That's part of the reason why you trade for a vet like Jaren Jackson Jr. that's making $50 million a year. And I think part of the reason why they sort of tanked this past year as hard as they did was that this year is the year that they're looking to be that. And so when I look at Utah's roster, I see two really good interior defenders that I personally would try to play together in Kessler and Jackson, and can't do that. And Jackson is not a five. But then I get to Markkanen, who scored 27 a game, but he's out of place defensively as a three. And then you've also got Ace Bailey at that spot, and then that forward in the draft. And so I look at their roster, and they need a couple of guys that can defend on the perimeter for a living while also still having a starting center, right? And so I can see where they would get to a place where we don't want to pay Walker Kessler $35 million a year alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. Can we get a $15 to $20 million center to do a good job at that, to play that competently, and then devote some of those resources to another player? It's part of the reason why I think this is a rare instance where it's more realistic than normal.
It's not just the minutes. It's the allocation of resources financially, right? And how those two things work hand in hand, which is what you were speaking to earlier. Next year's salary cap is going to be $165 or $164 million. If Markkanen and Jaren Jackson Jr. combined make $95 million next year, the year after that, it'll be basically $100 million. And the year after that, it'll be about $105 million. The cap will continue to go up, and so that's fine. But if you tack on a $30 million contract for Walker Kessler or a $35 million contract, then suddenly, next season especially, you're looking at, what, $120 million of your $165 million salary cap allotted to three front court players, where the idea of all of them starting to me is like, maybe you can get away with that.
Yeah, you could sort of like squint and be like, yeah, maybe, but down the line, money-wise.
Then you're talking about 96 minutes, right? And so you can say like, oh, well, there are three best players. You can make an argument. There are three best players, but can they functionally play 25 minutes together a night or 30 minutes together a night in theory? And it's very hard to see that happening with those three players because of all of the positional overlap that exists. And so with only 96 minutes available, this was sort of Powell, Lamar Odom, Andrew Bynum question. And so We can almost guarantee the best version of our team is where one of you doesn't start and one of you doesn't close.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
And I remember us pining as Laker fans, go big, play all three of them together. And even back then, Phil didn't do that. And it was the right move.
It was the right move, mostly because of the defensive aspect of things and how you really didn't want Lamar Odom to chase around the Paul Pierces of the world or even the other perimeter player that Kobe wasn't going to guard if you decided to put Artest on that guy or Ariza on that guy. Right. And so ultimately, the happy medium ended up being that Bynum started and Odom closed. Mm-hmm. And that was basically how it ended up being. But in that version of the CBA, you could just do it in terms of, well, we'll just pay these guys the money, even though they all didn't make the max or anything like that. In this version of the CBA, it is trickier. And as you inch closer to the aprons, then your team building options start to get limited and restricted. I don't know what Utah is going to do. I will also say too, Pete, that even though it was a pick, I think in the 20s, they did draft a center just two seasons ago. Kyle Filipowski is their backup center. And he's an interesting player as well because he shoots the three ball. He is nowhere near the defensive player or anchor on that side of the ball that Kessler is. But he does help facilitate five out offense. And one of the names that we haven't brought up at all within the context of this is Will Hardy, Utah's head coach. And it's just like, to me, he would be someone who I'm like, let's give you some truth serum a little bit. What style are you actually going to want to play next season with all of these guys? And how do you see it happening? And if he doesn't have a pristine answer that explains what his ideal layout is, it's going to be tough. Obviously, he wants the most talented team that he could get. But the other side of that is, well, where does it go?
Yep.
That's where I kick the idea back to you. Do you think Kessler is gettable in this scenario?
I think it's possible. But ultimately, I think it comes down to, I think it would behoove Utah to move either Kessler or Markkanen this summer, with Markkanen seeming likelier to me because that's where the positional overlap is. So let's go to break here, and I want to come back, and I want to talk about how the Lakers should approach things if that's the case.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom! You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
Auto Trader. Buy your car online. Really?
Everyone learns a language for different reasons. Maybe you want to watch K-dramas without subtitles or talk with family members in their native language. Your life is unique. Your language learning should be too. Rosetta Stone, the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years, just launched Rosetta Stone Sapphire, a new app that combines its proven immersion method with the latest innovation in technology to help you learn faster, personalize your lessons, and have more fun along the way. Most language apps teach the same generic topics. Sapphire helps you focus on what you actually want to talk about, whether that's travel, family, work, or your favorite hobbies. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. You'll get unlimited access to all 25 Rosetta Stone languages, plus all the new Sapphire learning tools. Visit rosettastone.com/audio to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/audio and start learning a language for real.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
So you remember when we did the center pod a little while ago, and I was talking about how it felt like one of those nights where you're trying to decide what you want for dinner, but nothing sounds good. I think that that is sort of lurking in the background. I really think the Lakers need a starting center. We've talked a lot about like Luka and Austin and that pair and whatnot. And I think if you're going to make that duo work, the position that really links both players is the five spot. There's always a lot of talk about what Luka needs and the center spot and a lob threat and all of that is usually one of the first things that's brought up. But I'd argue that Austin needs that as much, if not more, than Luka does, and that a really good five and the five being productive brings out the best in Austin. And so if your two best players really thrive next to a certain type of guy, I can absolutely see why the Lakers would be sort of zeroed in on this position. But so many of the names are like, that guy's a backup. I like him, but he's a 2-3 shift player in the playoffs. And I thought Ayton gave us really competent center play, and I want to talk about him in this context in a moment, but we sort of saw where that falls off and the level of play in the playoffs where you really need a better five. And so with all of this in mind, D, if you're going to Utah and you want Walker Kessler, how do you approach things in terms of being able to make it happen?
This is an interesting question because I think that you need to make friends with the Jazz within the context of this.
With and Danny like, Ainge?
Look, man.
Never. Never. We got to use a different word than friends. Business partners or something.
Sure. Collaborator.
Yeah. There we go. That sounds somewhat ominous. Right? I could go with collaborator.
I think you need to try to get a sense of what they actually want, big picture and long term, and how you can help facilitate that for them. And I think the Lakers are both a threat to the Jazz in this way because they can put an offer sheet on the table for Kessler. I think that the Lakers are also in an interesting position where they have enough cap space where Ooh. They can like move on to a second plan and still be like, I'm a threat.
This is such a great point. I didn't even consider this, that they'll still have more cap space left over to pursue other players, even with an offer sheet for Kessler on the table. Great point.
So there's a world where the Lakers are able to trade Jared Vanderbilt and Dalton Connect, maybe even on draft night. And the prospect of that could allow the Lakers to operate as a team, even if it's not yet known what they've done with LeBron's rights and Rui's rights and all of their free agents' rights, to act as though they're a team that has upwards of $50, $55 million in cap space. And I'll be very interested to see if the looming threat of being like, well, I can offer Walker Kessler $35 million and essentially still go out into the marketplace and act as a team that has more cap space to offer than like the MLE. I use the exceptions as benchmarks for levels that if I want to be competitive in the open market, then can I pay you more than an exception in order to steal your services away from a team who's maybe just as desirable as you are, but mm-hmm. only has an exception to offer?
And this applies to all of the different exceptions, right? So even like a room level exception, which is around $9 million or so, if you offer that guy $10.5, $11 million, you're ahead of every other team that's got that room exception to offer.
So to me, that's where I think the Lakers can be a threat to the Jazz. It's just like, yeah, no, we'll put $35 million to the side for a little bit while we go flirt with these other players in the open market for a difference making. Because the Lakers could, in theory, Pete, be like, oh, well, we didn't get Walker Kessler. Guess what? We're going to bring back LeBron James and Rui, and yeah. we're going to sign this other player, and we're going to be fine.
Most of the players on the open market, which is not very good, the best ones are our own guys. But I do think there needs to be sort of a carrot and stick. Like, there is this threat of we can yes. do this. However, you have needs, and we can help you fill them. I think the Lakers' cap space sort of being exchanged toward Utah, right? Like, I sent you a trade yesterday where the Lakers get Kessler. The Utah gets a first-round pick from both the Lakers and Denver and Christian Brown and DeAndre Ayton, who I think in any scenario where, say, we were to get Kessler, they would need a legit five back, right? Like somebody that could give them competent center play for cheaper than they want to spend, obviously, on Kessler. Now, again, I think this is more applicable to Markkanen due to, I think, more of a positional glut there than Kessler. Like, maybe they want to go Jaren Jackson Jr. at the five, Markkanen at the four, Bailey at the three, and just sort of spread you out and switch everything. I think that's dangerous to put Jackson at the five. But I do think the Lakers have the ability to, all of those teams that are looking to get off of a little bit of money, Brown, Dort, guys like that, that's exactly the type of player that I think Utah needs to put around guys whose main job is to put the ball in the bucket.
Again, it's also super interesting to me, Pete, that it's just like the Jazz could also, in theory, know going in that, look, we're going to be able to draft either DeBanza, Peterson, or Boozer. And there's a world where they can say, in all of those scenarios, I like Jackson and Markkanen next to any single one of those players as like my starting front court, right? Mm-hmm. And I actually think that the idea of Boozer slotting next to like Markkanen, who's more of a perimeter-based player, and Jackson, who is a driving player, right, and less of a post-up player, but a floor spacer as well, Boozer actually slots offensively between them. He's also a very good rebounder as a power forward, which is one of the areas where Triple J is less like. So they can complement each other in that specific way. Kessler is obviously a very good archetype of this as well, and he's a massive human being. But I'm saying that there are worlds where I think the Jazz could sell themselves on, well, no, Kessler can be the odd man out. We'll pay a guy on a rookie salary, and maybe we'll get a backup center, and we'll go that route instead. And this is where the Jazz have a bunch of optionality. I like the position that they're in for them. I think, though, forecasting their salary stuff out, not just next year, but 2 years ahead of time, where the prospect of paying Kessler and then having Keontae George's extension, which he's going to be extension eligible soon as well, have that kick in and have all of that money on their books is going to be a tricky thing in terms of team building stuff. Especially since the allure of Jackson to the Jazz was that, well, he signed for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, this is why we're trading for him. We don't have to convince him to stay. We've got him. So forecasting his salary out, forecasting Markkanen's salary out, this is where it gets trickier, and they are going to have to balance this.
They are, and it becomes a question of how are they going to be able to address their needs that they still have. Like, they're one yeah. of those teams that only has the mid-level exception to spend since they're over the cap. And so utilizing the Lakers' cap space to be able to get the types of players that they want is not something that they have the option to do on their own. And that, to me, I think is the most persuasive thing from their perspective of, hey, we could put together a good team right now because all of those numbers escalating as they will be, especially with Keontae George's extension likely coming up, they're not going to have the tools to be able to pursue these other players aside from an MLE. The Lakers have so much cap space that they could really help them do business.
They could. And depending on who goes out and what comes back in, if it's a two-team trade versus like a three-team trade, in the example that you provided, they're essentially swapping out what they would pay Kessler and paying that to Christian Brown instead, right?
Well, and he makes like $21 million, and I think Kessler's going to get 30-plus. Like, I think there's going to be at least a $10 million difference between what Brown gets and what Kessler will.
I think that's true. The point I was trying to make is that the difference between it being like a three-team deal and having like a $10 million trade exception is much different than making a two-team deal between only the Lakers and the Jazz, where in theory, they could have up to a $30 million trade exception or $35 million trade exception if no one is in the deal at all, right? And having a big trade exception on your books that would then allow you to be a way station potentially for a player who is like an okay veteran who could maybe help you, but isn't someone who you have to commit to long term, for example. Like, could they go to Memphis and be like, you know who would help us is Kentavious Caldwell Pope. We'd be happy to take him on and lessen your payroll responsibilities, Memphis. Right? If they draft Darren Peterson, for example, and be like, look, we'll be happy to take KCP off your hands. Do you want to sweeten it with like, give us a couple of seconds or 2 or 3 seconds that we can hoard, right? And we get KCP and like, that's good for us. Right?
And that's the other aspect of it too, is I think they could get a couple of firsts out of this, right? Like, you and I differ a little bit on Brown, whether or not you would have to attach a first or not, but there are players around the league in this market where teams are having to get off money. Teams are going to be happy to do that for them at a cost, right? The player has to be at a certain level for them to be like, yeah, we'll take them on for free. But in most cases, you actually have to include a degree of compensation.
Yeah, and the Lakers are very likely to have to include some compensation as well in order to get the Jazz to do business and not essentially hold their money hostage
exactly
for 3 days while the rest of the market goes down. I was looking for similar deals that have happened, and the deal that I ran into, Pete, was the sign and trade that happened between the Bucks and the Pacers when Malcolm Brogdon left the Bucks and went to the Pacers. Brogdon was a restricted free agent, and the Pacers wanted to sign him to an offer sheet. And basically, what the Pacers' own owner did was just like, he went straight to the Bucks owner and was just like, look, man, let's not do the song and dance of like, oh, we'll put out an offer sheet and do this. We'll send you guys draft compensation, and you send us Malcolm Brogdon, and that'll be fine. And the compensation was they sent them a future first in 2 seconds when I was reading up on the deal. And I was just like, man, that feels like a lot in today's parlance of picks and everything else. But it's not going to be for free.
That's right.
Like, if you want him just for the cap space, you're going to have your money tied up in this. And so I do think it's interesting, like, what the song and dance would end up having to be between the Jazz and the Lakers, because Utah's not just going to be like, well, yeah, we'll send you Walker Kessler and not get anything out.
Certainly not. I think where you land on that is if you can help them alleviate a logjam, which, you know, oh, we have too many good front court players, is not the worst thing in the world. It's not like their backs are against the wall, but they do have a minutes and money crunch. But if you can sort of rebalance their roster in a way that makes their team better and they get a couple of firsts out of it, I think you're starting to get into the area where, hey, that would be persuasive to them on a guy that they obviously don't want to pay beyond a certain amount that is not feeling all that great about it. So I really like talking this out with you, D. We'll be back tomorrow, talk more about free agency and trades and all of that. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's in. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one. Miss it. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.